testers and giving away pierogies or something. Would we allow that? No. No, we would not. Well, then after that, after this outbreak of violence, the protest leaders, the three main leaders, official leaders, and President Yanukovych reached a truce. And the truce was that protests would be allowed, and the protesters would stop attacking the police. Also, opposition politician Yulia Tymoshenko was freed from prison. The government was switched to a parliamentary government, and there would be elections in May, and Yanukovych resigned. That's what the Yanukovych and the three protest leaders agreed to. But apparently that was not good enough for the right-wingers, this Pravi Sektor, which is the extreme right-wingers, and then there's the Svoboda Party, which is almost as extreme. And then picking up on what Teresa mentioned about the who were these snipers? Well, there was a very interesting story. This is on Russia Today, so consider the source and check it out yourself. You can find it. What happened was apparently the government of the Ukraine, the Yanukovych government, hacked into a phone call from European Union Foreign Affairs leader Catherine Ashton, and she was talking with the Foreign Affairs Minister of Estonia, and they were talking about what was going on in, and I heard that you could get it on, it's on the internet, and they have you can hear the recordings, you hear the voices, and apparently the foreign minister from Estonia said that it was an authentic recording. It was not doctored or anything. And one of the things, this is what he said. His name is Urmas Pate. He said, "There's now stronger and stronger understanding that behind the snipers, it was not Yanukovych, but it was somebody from the new coalition." That was the Estonian foreign minister talking to Baroness Catherine Ashton. And she replied, I think we do want to investigate. I mean, I didn't pick that up. That's interesting. Gosh. Well, this call took place after the Estonian Urmas Pate visited Kiev. And he got his information from a woman, a doctor, who was working with the protesters treating the people who were shot. Her name was Olga Bogomolets. So Pate recalled his conversation with his doctor, and this is what he said. "And second, what was quite disturbing, this same Olga told as well that all the evidence shows that the people who were killed by snipers from both sides, among policemen and then people from the streets, that they were the same snipers killing people from both sides." And Catherine Ashton said, that's terrible. And Pate goes on, "so that she then showed me some photos. She said that as a medical doctor, she can say that it's the same handwriting, the same type of bullets, and it's really disturbing that now the new coalition, that they don't want to investigate what exactly happened." So that is a story. You can go to Russia Today and see if you can do a web search on a leaked phone call. That certainly bears more investigating. We might talk about Yanukovych is described as being a super corrupt. People went in and looked at his palatial mansion and everything with the gold bathroom fixtures and everything. The guy lived very high for a poor country, and undoubtedly he is a crook. The interesting thing is that there are a lot of crooks. That whole area is full of oligarchs. There's a Russian oligarchs, there are Ukrainian oligarchs. Apparently, the new Ukrainian government is sending some of these rich oligarchs to be appointing them governors in eastern Ukraine. But of these oligarchs, probably the best known is Mikhail Khodorkovsky. He was a guy who was in prison for several years, who was recently released by Putin, Vladimir Putin. And Yulia Tymoshenko is another oligarch. There were a whole bunch of Russian oligarchs who are living in exile in London. And what happened was that when the Soviet Union collapsed back around 1991, there were people who were in the communist hierarchy, you know, kind of mid-level managers or whatever, who were able to latch on to state property. And they bought it, they sort of latched on to it, and they became immensely wealthy, billionaires. And then what they also did was they kind of sold shares to Western investors. And I am convinced that, well, this went on under Boris Yeltsin. I don't know how many people remember Boris Yeltsin. He was the amiable drunk who ruled Russia for a while, until he died, and then the power got handed over to Putin. Well, I am convinced that the reason that, most of all, the reason the U.S. hates Putin is because he wouldn't give away Russia the way Boris Yeltsin did. Just recently, Hillary Clinton called him or sort of compared him to Hitler. Well, by the way, Hillary Clinton is coming to Portland sometime soon. I don't know how you feel about her. I think I consider her a kind of a warmonger light, sort of a neocon light, but that's neither here nor there, I guess. But if people want to go protest her appearance, feel free. We might talk a little bit about the history of Ukraine. Ukraine is sort of, the name means border region. And they've been under foreign rule for centuries until after World War One. After World War One, a lot of nations were created and borders were jiggled around. And two of the nations that were created was Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia, which had been part of the. Well, Yugoslavia was part of the Ottoman Empire. And in 1922, a few years later, Ukraine became a republic in the Soviet Union. That was in 1922. So that is sort of the birth of Ukraine as a political entity. Then in 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed, Ukraine became an independent nation. Well, we might ask, how did the borders of Ukraine get delineated? It's a schizoid nation. You know, the eastern Russian speaking part was not always part of Ukraine. You have two languages. You have two religions. Catholic, and the Ukrainians are mostly Catholic, and the Eastern Ukrainians are Russian Orthodox. So if any nation is ripe for being split up, I think it is Ukraine. I mean, what did they have? Very little in common. They have a lot of things. They might be better off running their own affairs and not trying to rule over others. Well, our leaders talk about territorial integrity and sovereignty and all that. We might go back to Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia. Czechoslovakia was formed in 1918 on the sort of part of it is on the border of Russia. They were formed then, and then in they split up, and few people cared. I mean, in other words, the Czechoslovaks, the Czechs and the Slovaks decided that they were better off apart, and they split up Czechoslovakia. So you have the Czech Republic, and you have Slovakia. This has been sort of called the Velvet Divorce, because it was done quite peacefully, and nobody minded. Then in Yugoslavia, in the 1990s, the U.S. helped break up Yugoslavia. So talk about territorial integrity. The U.S. decided that republics that formed Yugoslavia should be independent, and we supported the independence. Well, it was Bosnia, and there was Serbia, which is sort of regarded as the enemy, and Croatia and Slovenia, among others. So it was okay to break up Yugoslavia. The big question in Bosnia was, if Bosnia could secede from Yugoslavia, then why couldn't Serbs living in Bosnia secede from that nation? That was never answered, really. It was never even asked. But it's a definite issue, an issue of self-determination. But the U.S. and Western Europe fought a horrible war with lots of atrocities on both sides, although probably most of them from Serbia. But there was a war over the right to independence. So now we have Crimea is claiming they are going to be independent, and they are going to have a referendum. Originally was scheduled for March 30th, but apparently it's been moved up to 10 days from now. So that sort of would be around March 16th. And they were going to put this up a vote of the people. And we might ask, why not let all the people in Ukraine decide what country they want to be in? This is the fact that it wouldn't be a bad idea if they did this all over the world. Let people decide what country and set their own borders. The way the Czechoslovakian borders were set originally was the Czech Republic took over the sort of the medieval duchies of Bohemia and Moravia. Well, all right, we have a caller that disagrees. Let's make a quick phone. Okay, you're on the air, sir.
Yeah, okay. There are several points here. First off, mm-hmm. The borders of Ukraine, they have never really been delimited before the Soviet period.
Mm-hmm. How did they get delineated?
They got delimited by the Soviet Union.
Oh, damn.
And interestingly enough, there was transfer of the Kuban area from Ukraine to Russia mm-hmm. during the Soviet period. This was decreed from Moscow. It wasn't people taking a vote. Mm-hmm. No one in the Soviet Union ever got to take a vote on what country they wanted to be mm-hmm. in.
Okay.
There wouldn't have been a Soviet Union.
So why should we go along with those borders then?
Well, there's no particular reason except that you don't want to disturb borders for light reasons. It causes a whole bunch of problems, so you've got to have a serious reason.
Well, I think this is a serious reason.
It is a serious reason, but if you were to take a plebiscite, I think what you would find is that even in Crimea, the majority of people do not want to shift it from Ukraine to Russia. They just want a charter of home rule.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's one way to find out, right?
I think you'll find the same thing in even in eastern Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Yanukovych was not popular there. The people there are no friends of the those in charge now in Kiev. But I've heard various things from people talking to the population there, and so far it appears that there is not a mass movement for secession from Ukraine and annexation to Russia.
Well, there's one way to find out, and that's to put it up to a vote. Otherwise, we're speculating.
Put it up to a vote. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the present government in Crimea is more suspect even than the present government in Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it come from? There was never a vote. It simply appeared on the scene. And the guy who is now the president was the head of a very minority party. They get about 3% of the vote.
Yeah, so I've heard that.
Totally unelected, represents mm-hmm. an extremist position. And so even holding the plebiscite is I think, unconstitutional there.
Well, and how would you know what the people want?
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens now.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
If you try to suggest holding a plebiscite in most countries to see what they want, you see how Spain reacts to the the Catalans, huh?
And the Basques.
And the Basques.
Well, they're going to have one in Scotland very shortly in a few months.
Right.
Why not? Why not everywhere?
Okay, now you're
in. Why not in this country, as a matter of fact?
Well, you might. Maybe we'll get rid of Texas that way.
Good riddance. Good riddance to Texas.
Yeah.
Bye, bye, folks.
Wait a minute. Your religious information is not at all accurate. It's only in the farthest western provinces that there is anything like a Catholic majority.
Mm-hmm.
Central Ukraine is mostly Orthodox, and that includes the ethnic Ukrainian population, not mm-hmm. Simply the Russians. Okay, so the idea that the Eastern Ukraine is Orthodox and the Ukrainian part of Ukraine is Catholic is that's really bad
information.
Well,
it's morally, you know, I mean, it's not hard. It's not a real hard line there, but even so, I mean, I don't see any reason why Ukraine should be one nation. It seems pretty much two different entities sort of living in some uneasy coexistence. Why do they have to be in one nation? Why can't, if they want to separate, why can't they? Czechoslovakia did, and nobody raised any objection there.
Well, nobody raised any objection there. It was an amicable thing. The Czechs and the Slovaks don't really dislike one another that intensely.
Mm-hmm.
And in Yugoslavia, of course, the separation was not so amicable. And you've got Belgium. There are two people there, two different populations who have a tense relationship with one another. You have Switzerland, where there are three or four or five,
mm-hmm.
depending. And
so I'll tell you what, I'd like to say
like that. So you can't just say that, that. You see, what you've got is the kind of 19th century liberal European notion of the nation state as an ethnic unity, blood
well,
and soil.
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, I don't. I'm just saying it's whatever the people want it to be. If people want to divide themselves up in that way, that's their point. That's their business. I mean, that's not something I would support. But I'm going to have to end this part of the discussion because I got a couple more things I want to say before the show is over. So thanks for your call, and you made some interesting points and worth discussing. There's a very interesting article by Robert Parry in the March 4th Consortium News. Now, Robert Parry is a longtime journalist. He first, back in the 80s, he reported on atrocities committed by the government in El Salvador. And he's always been a kind of a whistleblower reporter. And he's still around Washington putting out his Consortium News. I really recommend it. But one thing he said is very interesting, that the neocons are really after President Obama. And that President Obama, this is Robert Parry writing, has a kind of a sort of, in a way, almost an alliance with Putin, where Putin has helped out. Putin helped Obama head off airstrikes against Syria. I just remember that event. He also helped bring about negotiations with Iran over their nuclear reactors. And so he has helped out Obama. Putin has also dressed down Bibi Netanyahu and Prince Bandar bin Sultan, and they have never forgiven him. But anyway, in some behind-the-scenes way, Obama needs Putin to keep to keep him on track. This is Robert Parry again. I would look up the March 4th Consortium News. You'll find his article there. And Parry says that Obama's big mistake is when he became president, when he set up his cabinet, he would have a so-called team of rivals. And so he has got neocons like Robert Gates was in his cabinet. He had David Petraeus, General Petraeus. And he had Hillary Clinton, who are sort of subverting what Obama may or may not be wanting to do. I mean, my impression is that Obama is much less inclined to go to war than people like Robert Gates and Hillary Clinton and Petraeus, and certainly these neocons who are sniping from the sidelines. To me, these are really vicious people, the neocons. They're willing to sacrifice others for their little delusions of conquest. Most of these neocons have never seen a uniform. They never worn one. They've never actually been in any army. They've always been on the sidelines letting other people fight their wars for them. So that is very interesting that the neocons are out with people within the administration are trying to sabotage what President Obama is doing. Well, we might also look to the future. What's happening next? Things are moving very fast. There's lots of talk about the U.S. applying sanctions. Probably what would happen then is that Russia would end the gas subsidy. Right now, until recently, Ukraine was getting Russian gas at a steep discount. Well, Russia might just end that. If they're going to be sanctioned, they might respond with no more gas subsidy for Ukraine. They might give a gas subsidy to their allies in eastern Ukraine, possibly. There's also talk about Russia dropping the dollar and defaulting on debts. This was talked about by a Russian economic advisor. I can find his name here, but the idea would be that Russia would sell off its dollars. So here it is. A Kremlin aide was quoted on Tuesday as saying that if the United States would impose sanctions on Russia over Ukraine, Moscow might be forced to drop the dollar as a reserve currency and refuse to pay off any loans to U.S. banks. The man's name is Sergei Glazyev. And he's apparently a hardliner on economic policy, but this is the suggestion that he makes. Also, what is very interesting is that Russia and China has come out as standing behind Russia in their dispute with Ukraine, and this sort of leads to if Russia and China do get together. And also get together with Iran. If Russia and Iran get together, between those two countries, they have a huge percentage of the world's oil and gas supplies. And I think this partly is what all this maneuvering and war is about. It's a war for geopolitics, for pipelines, for oil. But it could get really serious. And if China comes down firmly on the side of Russia, their reply to sanctions might be to, if they dump the dollar, I think the dollar is in real trouble. There will be economic chaos in this country. Be very interested to have a discussion on what the day-to-day effects would be of ending the dollar as a world currency. And so that's where we are now. I hear the music playing. If we had more time, we might talk about how climate change is sort of at the bottom of all this. But that is our look at what's going on in Ukraine. It's a fast-moving situation, getting pretty ominous. But hopefully cooler heads and reasonable people will prevail. So thank you for listening. Stay tuned. I understand that Flashpoints is going to have a discussion of what's going on in Ukraine also. So stay tuned because you're going to get it on KBOO. You may not get it on NPR, but you will certainly get it here at KBOO, your radio station.
It is KBOO Portland with a minute to go before 10 o'clock. In 15 minutes, Flashpoints will continue coverage of the situation in the Ukraine with former high-level CIA analyst Ray McGovern and Answer Coalition founder Richard Becker. At 11 on Between the Covers, local illustrator Chelsea Stephen and photographer and writer Patrick Dixon discuss the Fisher Poets Anthology, Anchored in Deep Water. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Portland author Stephen Hanks discusses his book, The Aki Tree, A Portland to Africa Search for a Family. But first, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. Not a member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
Now is the time to act the fool tonight. Forget about your worries and you will be all right.
KBOO Community Radio and Oaks Park Roller Rink proudly present Bounce, Roll, Skate, Tuesday, March 11th from 7 to 9 p.m. This is a family-friendly event for all ages. We'll be broadcasting a two-hour funk and disco mashup special live on 90.7 FM KBOO, and you can be a part of it. Feel free to dress up in your favorite 70s outfits, wigs, and costumes. That's Bounce, Roll, Skate, March 11th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Oaks Park Roller Rink. Call 503-231-8032 for more details, or go to kboo.fm/bounce-roll-skate.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, March 6th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. And we have headlines for you. We also have weather. There's plenty of weather out there. Anybody who enjoys weather, this is a day for you. First up, though, the headlines. A civilizational threat? That's how the Pentagon puts it. And it's a source of terror for millions of people around the world. The U.S. military would know whereof it speaks. And speak it did in the 2014 U.S. Department of Defense Quadrennial Defense Review, the QDR. If you like that sort of thing. It came out yesterday, this review, and declares that the threat... This is from the Pentagon. The threat of climate change impacts a very serious national security vulnerability that, among other things, could enable further terrorist activity. And that's just one of the points they make in the review. Next up, at a state house hearing before the Massachusetts Joint Transportation Committee, the chief executive of the largest license plate scan database, nearly said scam there, but wait till you hear the rest of this. The largest license plate scan database in the country insisted that license plate recognition technology is simply photography, right? You know, like taking a selfie, only they've got all your information. A handful of civil liberties and privacy groups also testified in support of restrictions, including the American Friends Service Committee, Jewish Alliance for Law and Social Action, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, and so it goes. Law enforcement representatives were notably absent among witnesses. And, however, things are getting even more bizarre as the New York Times is reporting that the CIA is now formally accused of spying on the Intelligence Committee and its staffers in an attempt to keep that report from being released. The details are still a little cloudy, but in December, Senator Mark Udall revealed that the Senate Intelligence Committee had come across an internal CIA study that apparently corroborated the information that is in the big Senate report, in which directly contradicted claims by the CIA to the committee about how the report was inaccurate. The Eugene Register Guard has a top 10 list for today. We'll give you some highlights from that. The next step in negotiations over the Ukraine, while Russian and Western diplomats continue to talk here in the United States, Republicans and Democrats continue to scream accusations at each other. It's one of those classic told you so moments where both sides have points that they can legitimately make, but perhaps at a lower volume. They need to learn to use their indoor voices. And a healthcare law, a change that may help Democrats. The White House announces a two-year extension from some policies avoiding possible election year insurance cancellations. We have a lot of headlines today. Perhaps it would be better if we just put those up on the KBOO website. Love to hear feedback from listeners. If you use that website, if you use the Air Cascadia postings when we do get those up there, and if it is helpful to have the written transcripts of this. A public hearing on Seattle's minimum wage to a crowd estimated about 700 people on yesterday night. Many of them red-shirted advocates of a move to increase the city's minimum wage to $15 an hour. Kshama Savant, where are you right now? We will be having Kshama back on the show in the very near future. And the CEO of Bitcoin was found... it's straight out of a movie. The CEO of Bitcoin was found dead in his hotel room in Singapore. Come on, somebody say those three little words that mean so much. No foul play. Oh, absolutely no foul play. And the White House attorneys and civil rights groups argued that a bipartisan vote yesterday blocking Debo Adebiyele from advancing towards confirmation sets a troubling precedent that could dissuade attorneys with aspirations to serve in government from taking on unpopular clients or working for unpopular causes. Let's not forget that the current head of the Supreme Court, John Roberts himself, at one point in his career, defended six men accused of murder. So there you have it. Okay, as far as the weather is concerned, it's blowing a goat out there. It is very windy, very rainy, and we can expect that to continue over the next few days. Steve Horn is on the line right now. He's our guest for today. Steve has been a constant source of some of the most extraordinary stories we have aired on Air Cascadia. He is an investigative reporter who seems to come up with all manner of things that we might